from a galaxy far, far away.
And a bookshelf straight out of the 90s.
From Thrawn to Dantooine.
And everything in between. This is Legends Look Back.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Legends Look Back, proudly part of the UTV Podcast Network. This is a Star Wars books podcast for people who play Blink-182 at their weddings. No big deal. Where we celebrate our rich EU history, the Star Wars EU, that is, and expand your universe one episode at a time. I'm your host, Jared Mays, freshly back from the most epic weekend of all time. I'm joined by my legendary co-hosts, once again, 2D in your computer screens or your phones or iPads, but I got to see him in person. Can confirm he is, in fact, 3D, and that is Freddie C.
Hello, everyone, and yes, I did play Blink-182 at my wedding. Absolutely.
It was classy, though.
Yeah, it was good. It was classy. We'll show some photos later.
Photos of you or of Blink-182?
Maybe
both. Let's do both.
You know who we can also see photos of anytime we want, because let's face it, he's beautiful, he's wonderful, he's our producer, Rick Race.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, when I think of class, I do think of Freddie C. So, classy guy.
Yeah, he had, for context there. Freddie, tell us what happened over the weekend. What are we talking about?
Yeah. First of all, I've got a little bit of Blue Label in here, leftover Blue Label from the wedding. That's what happened. We had a wedding. I had a wedding, not Jared and I. Well, Jared was there.
Right. I was telling people.
He married you. Did he not marry you?
I did. I was telling people I was marrying my friend Freddie.
Which he did. He was the officiant at my wedding.
There you go.
Full blown Jedi gear.
And yeah. When I talked, took Jedi... me over an hour to iron those Jedi robes, by the way.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about just any Jedi gear. I'm talking like some of the best Jedi robes I've ever seen. Everybody was commenting how awesome the officiant looked. And of course, it was Jared Mays.
Well, appreciate that. Couldn't quite keep up with your freshly tailored suit. Or, let's be honest, that Nia, your bride, looked absolutely stunningly beautiful. And is here with us in the chat tonight. Welcome and congratulations. And yeah, let's get back to the Jedi robes. The Jedi robes. Yeah, there it is. There's Nia on screen. I did get new boots for the wedding, and the boots, they got a compliment. So yeah. Thrakken's Thrift Store coming up next episode, I'll show off my Jedi boots. Nia's uncle, the most wonderful man I've ever met in my entire life, Uncle Romero. Shout out to Uncle Romero. He was like, man, those boots, are they special? What's special about those boots? And I was like, well, it's really the two stripes at the top that makes them. Like, how do you describe? I was like, how do I even begin to break this down for this man? And anyway, he was into it. He called me Obi-Wan all weekend.
Yes.
All weekend, he would say, hey, Obi-Wan, come over here. And I'd go over there, and then he would say, what's your name again?
Obi-Wan. And,
you got it right the first time, yeah.
So once again, a Blink-182 song.
I got some photos. You want to see them?
Okay. Let's get to it. But before we get into the wedding proper, just a bit of a teaser for what we're going to do in this episode. Yes, we're going to talk here at the top of the show a little bit about Freddie's wedding. It was spectacular. We've got photos. There's some Star Wars-y stuff there. It's relevant to the show, I promise. We will also be continuing our coverage of the New Jedi Order with the sixth book in the saga, Balance Point, by Kathy Tyers. We'll talk about Force Visions, Refugee Crises, and Jason Solo's Kembellian Crossing the Threshold Reluctant Hero moment. But first, a brief recap, like we said, of Freddie's wedding from this past weekend. And let's just say the Force was definitely with us. But first, a brief plug for the Utini Patreon. One of you guys want to take the ad here? Freddie, you want to sure. You want to read the ad read, you know, yeah. For us?
Of course.
The ad is us.
Yeah, the ad is us. Our first ad is us. It's a plug for the Utini Patreon. It's newly revamped with so much more exciting content in the works. The Utini Patreon experience is a fantastic way to get extra behind-the-scenes bonus content with new content coming all the time, including a peek behind the curtain on making of Utini's flagship YouTube videos from Eric, to extra content from each and every Utini podcast. We have a long-form deep dives and special events coming your way, so you can be up close and personal with your favorite Utini creators. Be on the lookout for a bonus Patreon video from us, Legends Look Back, on May the 4th. Check it out at patreon.com/utini.
Well done, Freddie. Everybody give Freddie a round of applause. He read that like a newly married man, didn't he?
I was totally going to
brought the energy.
U.S. at the end, so I'm super glad that I didn't read that.
Yeah, the us that's making that Patreon video, by the way, is me. So you guys are not on the hook for that one. Nice. The us, by the way, is me. Me is us. Yeah. You know who else is us? Freddie and Nia, his beautiful bride. Freddie, tell us, like, in 5 sentences, what was the wedding about? What happened?
Yeah. Okay. So the wedding setting, Sedona, Arizona, April 20th.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it? Yeah.
It was like Tatooine, honestly. Very Tatooine vibes. Like the part where there's the Star Wars book that I used. The wedding, it kind of is like the scene where R2-D2, if you're Italian. The part where he gets shot by the Jawas in the canyon. That's kind of what this was like.
Yeah.
Sedona.
What was that? Not Beggar's Canyon. I forget which canyon.
Right. It is. I know what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, so set in Sedona. A weekend of April 20th. And, I mean, it was a small, intimate... It was small and intimate in a way.
Small and intimate, and yet bursting at the seams for the venue we were at.
With joy as well. Everyone was incredibly excited. It was... honestly, a whirlwind. It went by so quickly. Jared and I got to hang out most of the time. The wedding was fantastic. It went how I expected it to go, and then some. So I got to try all the food at the wedding. Not a lot of people get to do that.
Man, the food was fantastic. They were bringing around those trays of appetizers. As soon as the wedding was over, it was like a SWAT team situation. I was like, I almost said, as we stand and sing. That's church. It was the end when I said, Mr. and Mrs. Freddie C. And you two walk out the back of the auditorium, which was not an auditorium. It's a courtyard. Back of the courtyard. Finish the wedding. And then the SWAT team of wedding coordinators come out, clean up all the chairs, and they bring out these appetizers of food. And I was like, hey, keep them coming. Keep them coming. Fantastic food.
Man. As we were going to take these photos off-site, which wasn't too far, it's one of the vortexes in Sedona, if you're into that. We were gifted by Nia's sister a couple of crocheted lightsabers.
They're so cool, yes. Dude. They're so cool.
They definitely made their way into the photos. I'm not sure how exactly to go back from here, but we're going to find out. Let's see. This one's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. It's over, Freddie. I have the high ground.
Exactly. That's what I was going for.
Shay, hey, let me give you a wedding, like a marriage tip here. She will always have the high
That's
ground
right.
for the rest of your life.
Let me help you out. You're right. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. All you need to know right there. Or no, you're right. Let's say I'm right. You're right. I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
Yeah. You got it.
Here's part of the ceremony. So this was, I was in tears when Nia walked down the aisle.
It was great. I was having to hold Freddie back. It was like I was supposed to give him the cue.
Yeah.
For when he was supposed to turn, which is good because that's my Twitter handle, Jared Q Mays. So I'm very, very good at the cues. And it was a lot of fun. It was great. Good moment. I was watching Freddie, watching Nia.
Check that out.
That's I joined up with them right after this shot was taken for audio listeners. This is a shot of Freddie soaring through the air. And his groomsman catching him. He's, what, a good 25, 30 feet off the ground?
Yeah, it was terrifying. They threw me eight times just before the wedding.
Oh, gosh.
So I met up with them, and they are all absolutely out of breath. And I'm like, what have you guys been doing? It is 20 minutes to go time. Yeah, that nice. Great groomsman. A lot of fun. And we've got some audio clips from these guys that I have not yet had time to prepare, but hopefully next episode, maybe it'll be a Patreon thing, not sure. We'll hear from a lot of Freddie's buddies, like their favorite Freddie story. I've got a story about Freddie being kidnapped. I've got a story about Freddie skydiving. There's a lot of fun stuff.
Absolutely. This is my favorite shot. One of the things that Jared hadn't really mentioned yet is we did a dance routine, and Jared can fill you in on his thoughts. We practiced since October of last year, this routine, and the one thing I learned from it was how to dip my bride and how to give her that smooch.
The trick is use your quads.
Yes.
You got to use the quads to tip the bride, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, and to Skooma Joe's comment here, absolutely well said. The courtship of Freddie C. There were no singing droids at the ceremony. However, when I posted a photo of me and Freddie behind the scenes, Jacob from the Cosmic Force, Jacob and Bounty Hunt fame, shout out to Bounty Hunt, Jacob said, I'm going to tell my kids this was the real truce at Bakura, this photo here, yeah. And so then someone else, I think it was Jacob, might have been Oz, one of them photoshopped our faces, Freddie, I don't know if I've shown you this yet, onto the book cover of the truce at Bakura.
Goodness.
Do I have that one?
I don't think I posted it. I'll post it in Slack. Anyway, it doesn't have Nia's face. It's got you, me, and Leia. It's only like a, you know, half effort on the Photoshop, but it's fantastic, and I need to get it framed.
Yeah, my socks, Jared. One last thing. The socks that I was wearing and the certificate, how I was housing him, I had the marriage certificate nicely secured in the Trapper Keeper.
Yeah.
As I was
It was like atomic purple, by the way.
Yeah. As I wore my Nicktoons socks, so oh,
nice. The Nicktoons socks. We had some other good Star Wars flares along the way, relevant to the podcast. Freddie walked down the aisle to the Force theme. I had a handful of Star Wars references throughout the ceremony. You know, I said that when I first met Freddie and Nia, I knew that one day I would be at their wedding because they had so much chemistry. Yeah, there's the shot of me in the Jedi robe. Somebody asked me, was I posing for that? No, I was just. I was locked in, y'all.
We're Q across the stars, right?
Yeah, for sure. When I first met Freddie and Nia, I knew I would be at their wedding one day. I did not know I would be wearing my Jedi robes at their wedding. Oh. I'll say that much.
Hey, sorry. You do have it in here.
Okay, here we go. The court, the Truce at Bakura starring me and Freddie C. And what a great... We need to have Nia on there, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then a comment taken out of context.
Oh, yeah, thank you for
the
that.
The last one.
And it says, wow, Jared, that photo is...
majestic.
And there's people who are photo-majestic like Jared. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, I appreciate that. You know, to be serious here for a second, there's other Star Wars things we could say about it, but well, we need to get on with the show. I will say, Freddie, you know, relevant to the show, why are we talking about a wedding on a Star Wars Books podcast? Because I met Freddie through this show. I was approached. We both joined Utini at the same time, 2018 or 19. Both joined up the same day. Did not know each other. He's from Arizona, California, you know, that area of the world. I'm from Arkansas. Really, we had no business knowing each other. And whereas Rick and I went to college together, we had, you know, same religion. We had some stuff that brought us together. Freddie and I didn't know each other that way. Then I was approached by the higher-ups, Eric, Corey, and Charles, about starting a Star Wars Legends podcast. That day, I reached out to Freddie about recording a test episode. You know why? He was literally the only person on planet Earth who I knew, other than the three guys on Living Force, who owned a microphone. And we had instant chemistry. We've done 150 episodes of the show. And now it's like truly one of the dearest friends I've ever made in my entire life. Cannot believe I got to be a part of your big day. This expands beyond podcasting and into, like I said, 3D, into real life. So hopefully all the fans can feel that too. I want to say thank you to all of you. And I got to meet several of them at the wedding. Anna, shout out to your friend Anna. Anna, if you're listening. Anna, first thing she says to me, she says, I listened to your show, you know. And she's so awesome. I loved hanging out with her. She was like, hanging out with you is so weird because I listened to you all the time. And now you're here. And it's weird. I'm not going to lie. So, Freddie, you think that about sums it up?
Yeah, just before we end up here, you know, thank you to everybody, Skooma Joe, Jeremy, everybody who reached out, Iskool, a lot of folks congratulating me. It was, you know, I know who you are. Don't worry. Thank you so much, all of you, for the congratulations.
Yeah. Your mom was trying to get Daniel Logan to come to the wedding. She told me, which is awesome of her. So Daniel Logan, you know who you are too. And we know who you are. And open invitation to ever be on Legends Look Back. But without further ado, let's get on with the show. Rick, what are we talking about today?
I'm talking about that little book. The book, let me pull this up.
You got it. I believe in you. You just read it.
Balance Point by Kathy Tyers. who also wrote Truths of Bakura, that one other book that we talk about sometimes. So this book,
I did not realize it was the same author until a couple days ago when Freddie said something about it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I'd recognize the name, but I hadn't made the connection either. Like, I knew that she'd read other things. I just didn't put it together as well.
Veteran Star Wars author, Kathy Tyers.
That's right.
Oh, hey, so, Freddie, check this out. My hardcover copy, sorry, Rick, my hardcover copy on the inside, it says Orange County Library. So
oh, man.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I just shut it. Keep going, Rick.
Yeah. So this is the sixth novel in the New Jedi Order. It was published in the year 2000, a nice round year. And this was the second hardcover for general release. If you guys remember, there's been some that had a hardcover, mostly the Science Fiction Book Club. But the actual hardcover were not that easy to find.
I thought you were about to say for General Grievous.
Oh, yeah. So are we ready to dive into the spoilery content and get going?
Yeah, I think so. I do want to put out a general, not General Grievous or general release, a general call to listeners. If you've not read The New Jedi Order and 19 books sounds like a lot to tackle. Honestly, I'm going to sick Emily on this project and she doesn't know it yet. I would like to see if somebody will just read the 5 hardcovers and I want to know what their experience is.
Interesting.
Because Del Rey, like, they theoretically designed the series to work that way.
Interesting.
To a certain degree. And I'm really curious what that's like for people.
Wow, yeah.
This would be book 2 if you were doing it that way.
You know, holy cow, this is 6th?
Is book 1 just Vector Prime?
Yes.
Okay. Honestly, you're missing a lot on book 2 and 3, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that 2, 3, 4 are extremely strong.
Man.
Yeah, I know. So I'm interested. Anybody out there wants to give that a shot, let us know. So without further ado, we're going to get into Balance Point. This is your last warning. If you've not yet read the book, or if you're like Freddie and read half of it, you're about to have the whole plot of the book spoiled. Sorry to out you like that on main, Freddie.
I just got married, guys.
Listen, that was a little time.
Yeah, it's a busy time of your life, busy time. On the wedding, any spare moment that we had, I was filling Freddie in on what happens in Balance Point.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, Freddie, here's what happens. Jason Solo, Yu Zhongbong, there's mods. All right, so spoiler warning, let's get into it. Balance Point. The primary plot of the book is set in and around the planet Duro, the plant with the butthead aliens, you know, the planet which Jaina is sentenced to recover upon after being forced to go EV in a battle with Rogue Squadron at the beginning of the book. She's wounded and blind and then sent for medical recuperation alongside her family on Duro. There she discovers that Duro has become a haven of refugees. Like I said, she's reunited with her family, Han, Leia, and Jason, though she and Leia have some beef in this book. That's a whole thing. Jason has a Force vision, which really sets the tone of the whole book, of Luke tossing him a lightsaber. He fails to catch the saber in said vision, therefore the entire galaxy falls into the hands of the Yu Zhongbong. Someone also in the vision tells him to stand firm. Jason is shook, rightly so. Force visions kind of mess you up sometimes, you know? When you have a bad dream, if you eat too much chocolate ice cream right before bed, kind of like that. Because of it, Jason vows to reject the use of the Force outright so that if he never uses it, he can never doom the galaxy. Right? Hmm. See the logic there? Hmm. More Skywalker solo family drama. Mara Jade, recently healed from her comb spore disease courtesy of Vergeer's tears, is suspicious that there's an alien life form living in her body. She feels a presence only to discover the Force-aided pregnancy test she's expecting. So huge galaxy-altering consequences there of Luke and Mara, which, by the way, the Wook describes the pregnancy as Luke and Mara, who have spent rigorous amounts of time procreating, are expecting a child. Like, the Wook is really weird about it, so that's cool.
Rigorous.
Yeah. Yu Zhongbong's spy Naminor is undercover on Duro, Count Olaf style. There he secretly sabotages the refugee camp with destructive mods, which could expose the refugees to Duro's toxic atmosphere. Mara and Jaina eventually discover his wily ways, confront him, and end up trapped under a cave while Numenor lives to fight another day. The Vong attack Duro and capture Jason, holding him hostage. Leia is eventually captured as well by War Master Sevong La, forced to make a choice to use the Force and save his mother, or keep his vow so as not to endanger the galaxy as he fears from his vision. Jason took up the call to fight, defeating War Master Vong War Master La in a savage duel, hurling La out the window, Mace Windu style. The book concludes with a messy end to the Battle of Duro. Some refugees are saved by Han and the crew of the Falcon alongside the New Republic. Others are sacrificed by the Vong, and yet others enslaved. Sevong La survived his fall, but the attempts on his life have left him scarred and deformed. He will need a prosthetic foot. He makes a declaration to the entire galaxy that the Vong will end the invasion, plot twist, and spare Coruscant if the New Republic will do one thing, bring him, it's actually two things, kind of three, depending on how we're counting, who's counting. If they'll do one thing, they'll spare Coruscant, and that's this, bring him Jason Solo and surrender or kill all the Jedi.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Appreciate it with your sound effects. Whew, what a book. Oh my goodness. So much to talk about with this. And we spent the first 20 minutes on the wedding, so let's get to it. Guys, where do you rate balance point? Masterpiece, incredible, great, good, fair, mediocre. For me, this one is probably all right, middle of the road, good. I think the intro is super strong. I think the conclusion is phenomenal, and most of the middle is just okay.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep. I was not underwhelmed, but it was a slower pace reading this one, and I felt like Jason and Jaina were just like whiny the whole book.
Jaina's very teenagery with her mom in this book, yeah.
Which I love. I love how, you know, like,
it's realistic.
But like the New Republic's like, oh yeah, you're not too young to be a fighter pilot and put your life in jeopardy. And then as soon as she gets in there, they're like, okay, go back to mom now. We're done. You know, and it's like, you're not going to take care of her. They said, we don't want to overcrowd the hospitals or whatever, but it's like,
come on. Shifting of responsibilities, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I think it's this book started off with me holding on to my seat, right? Like, I think it was not even the first chapter. It was just the preface. It just held me on to my seat. And I feel like I didn't feel that again for a while, right? Like, there were moments, but it wasn't, I guess, the direction I was expecting it to go in. It was definitely slow. Not a lot of building, in my opinion, but more situation building, right? Like, it's almost like this is a boiling point for what
is to come. And I don't know.
Could you call it a balance point, Freddie?
It's a balance point. That's really good. Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't get to read the whole thing, but I did get in my snips. I did put my 2.5 audio on
the drive back home. It's terrible.
Yeah. I would say really read like the last 50 pages there. That conflict with Leia and Sevong La, and Sevong La's a huge character in this series. In fact, Pablo, the architects of the NJO, this is the Sensual Reader's Companion here. It describes him as the Darth Vader of the series. Whereas Supreme Overlord Shimra is the Emperor. And so then, Jason then is like Luke. However, they do spell this out in the book that Jason and Sevong La are not related. So very helpful there. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. One thing I do want to point out, this is kind of my wrap up here, is this book is, I feel like, is very focused on Jason. Right, I feel like if we were doing like a soccer match, Jason has he's got control over the ball. He's got, you know, 90% ball control, in my opinion. That's how it felt. At least everything was for, I think, his development, for Jason's development.
Yeah, well said. If it's a Formula One analogy, you could say he's in first position whole race,
pole,
right?
Position, yep.
Pole position. I tried. I learned that Freddie's bros are Formula One fans.
Yeah, nice.
And I messaged Sports Talk in the Utini channel to say, help me. That some of you guys are Formula One guys. Corey, especially, I was like, hey, help me out. I don't know what to say. I'm stuck in a Formula One conversation. Somebody give me a talking point.
Nice.
Corey is apparently in Freddy's Bros Formula One group chat. And
yes. This is
Corey.
This is how we're going to spread the United, right? Freddy's
he comments Freddy's to Bros. Me to get to yell obscenities at Freddy's best man, Raul. So the random person, I've never met this guy before. I'm sitting next to him on a bench. We've not even said hello yet. He's talking to some other guys about Formula One. Corey from across the country tells me to call this man obscenities. They know each other. The random person I'm sitting on a bench with, it's hilarious.
What?
That's pretty I know. Cool. Amazing. So, but yes, Jason, so Tyres actually says that for her, so much of this book, the overall plot structure of the New Jedi Order as a whole, the point of this is the Campbellian story beat of the reluctant hero crossing the threshold. And so, to your point, Freddie, this is that, absolutely.
There it is.
All right, so I must have missed, I think, something being set up early in the book, because I don't remember what caused the conflict. Was it what happened on the space station
dream.
In Corellia? Okay, was it just the dream that got him, like...
Yeah, it scared him a bit.
Well, he's already been... Sorry, in the series, there's been this ideological divide between him and Anakin.
Right.
That Anakin thinks the Force should be used proactively like a weapon.
Right.
And Jason is like more mystical. He thinks the Force should be studied and observed and not wielded. And so he's already leaning pacifist.
But then to disconnect him entirely from the Force just seemed like a big leap from where that character development was going. I don't know. That was the hard part for me to figure out. Did I miss something? Like, what happened? But okay.
I think it's a collection of... this is the thing that I think Kathy Tyres relies on, which is the building of everything that happened beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I feel like the books prior to this really built out the universe, the Vong. They spent a lot of time... You know, the first book is obviously the introduction to it all. Then you've got the middle books building everything, and Kathy just takes it and runs with it. Right? So... I feel like Jason's already been questioning, you know, are we doing the right thing? He is the opposite of Kip Duron in every sense of the way, right? He does not want to use the Force. He's not bombastic. And he's really struggling in this book because it's a balance point, right? Like he's trying not to do something with the Force, but he has to. He has this dream that scares the bejesus out of him.
Bejesus 182. Yeah. And... very well said. You know, I love that idea that there's fear. I like this comment from Michael from in the chat here that it's a sense of fear in Jason. And so we, of course, know that fear is the path to the dark side. And so he's afraid that his failure will determine the course of the galaxy, which then let's skip on down to this question, guys, about Jason while we're on the topic. We everybody give our reviews before we move on to Jason? Everybody on good? Is that where we're all at? Yeah, so Jason's faced with this character-defining call to action in the climactic sequence, to reject the Force altogether or lose his mother at the hands of the Vong, or take up the lightsaber and face down the War Master, consequences be what they may. But did you ever really question if Jason would do the right thing? Was that ever really up in the air for you? Or, I guess a follow-up question, was saving his mother truly the right thing to do? Would it have been better to sacrifice Princess Leia, his own mother, in order to save the galaxy? Or was saving mom the right move?
Yeah.
It's kind of like an ethical trap question there.
As a reader, coming from my point of view, seeing what they did to Chewbacca, I felt anything could go at this point. And, you know, yes, Chewbacca is a major minor character.
Right.
But to me, he was a major character, and I feel like to all of us, he's a major character. And to have him go, I feel like anybody can go. I guess that's where I'm
at. So you felt like they could have axed Leia? I mean, sequel trilogy does it. They kill him off one by one by one.
Everybody dies. Everybody dies.
Yeah. Except for Chewie, who lives inexplicably. But they had us there for like 2 minutes. They thought he was dead. Yeah. Yeah. Rick, did you ever think that Jason would not pick up the call to adventure?
I think that conundrum in the book was the right call for crafting the story. I think that I did wrestle. I did wonder, how's this going to go? I don't think that I ever thought that this was how Leia was going to go out in Legends, but it did make me wonder if Jason would choose, you know, to protect his mom or not, and if he didn't, what repercussions would that lead to? How would that affect the relationship? And so I kind of entertained it for a second and thought maybe that he would. I thought maybe he would choose to do nothing, and then somebody else would miraculously come in and save her after he had clearly made his choice. But I think it was good. I think maybe that's why I felt like there wasn't enough conflict, where after knowing what he chooses to do, it was kind of like, so you just weren't that convicted about what you were saying? You just kind of testing the waters with it?
Rick, that's okay. This is a question for both Jared and Rick. I feel like he's going towards a priestly role of the Force. I guess seeing him go and do the opposite thing, how does that make you feel? Rick, I feel like you were getting to something there.
Interesting.
Almost like, don't do it, but then he does it, right? He's almost he's doing against what he preaches, or what he's been trying to preach.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know. There's a lot of exploration in him figuring this out. You know, it was pointed out earlier, they're 16. You know, they're still at that threshold of becoming adults, you know, young adults, teenagers. And I guess we give him a pass to an extent. But, yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. It's interesting, the whole priest idea of do you have these high and lofty ideals, or are you, on the ground level dealing with the people who need help, you know?
Yeah, when you get your hands dirty.
Yeah, and that's where the Force is with the living beings, you know? And anyway, that could get philosophical.
He really does come across to me, Jason, this early Jason of this series. He evolves later on in some crazy ways, but here he's kind of like that college freshman who's just taken a class about Marxism and then comes home for Christmas.
Yes.
And so he's like, oh, I know everything about everything, to Michael's point earlier in the comments. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, yeah, but what about, you know, you still got to pay your taxes, buddy, you know, right? Yeah, when push comes to shove. So he does take up the call to action. He does save his mom, which is epic. And a cool thing to keep track of with Jason is how many times moving forward will his huge character-defining moments come from reluctance, come from him feeling like, I don't want to do this, but it's the right thing that I have to do. And then, if you do that enough times, what will it do to a person when it's on this scale, when it involves so many, I mean, the entire galaxy at stake, not just, you know, getting your kids to soccer practice, but like the whole galaxy.
Michael the chat has a good point on what would have happened if Jason didn't
save his mother. A reminder.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just put it on. Yeah, there it is. Watching his mother die in front of him. Anyone reminded of episode 2?
Absolutely.
That was not even on my mind. So yeah, he's on a whole nother level for me there.
Wow.
Absolutely. But he saves his mother this time. So big pivot there. But this honestly is a similar timeline to the prequel trilogy. So this comes out in 2000. So episode 2 is in development.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a
good
and
one.
There are so many parallels between the prequel trilogy and this series that George is often intervening and telling the writers to do something different so it's not too similar. And I don't want to say too much about that because it might spoil some big plot moments. Moving forward, we'll get to them when we get to them. Once again, remarkable that we didn't spoil Chewie's death for Rick after 2 years on this podcast.
Congrats. Yeah, I've got some questions that I want to ask about the next two books. Well, a character that's in the next two books that I want to know what happens in. I don't want to ask because I just want to read and find out. But it's
The next book, I'm going to read every single word of it. I take my time. It is Edge of Victory 1. is, without a doubt, a top 10 Star Wars book of all time for me. I love it. At least my first read-through was. So I'm excited to return to that one. So Jason, very interesting character, reluctant hero, very much Campbellian, takes up the call to action, though doesn't want to, has the Force vision. Of course, was he right to interpret the Force vision the way that he had in the first place? Let's go down to this one, guys. Jason's Force vision forces his hand to reject the use of the Force, thereby sparing the galaxy of what he believes will be the destruction of his own mistake. Do you think that he was correctly interpreting that vision? Or do you think the Force was trying to show something else to him? So speculate, you know, here for a second, guys. Yoda, of course, tells Luke that the visions are not always true. Always in motion is the future.
Yeah.
Do you think, based off the vision that, as it was explained to you in the book, did Jason interpret it correctly? So the vision is, Luke tosses him a saber. He misses the saber. The galaxy falls in the hands of the Vong. Finally, a voice tells him to stand firm.
Okay, Rick, I'm going to let you go on this, but I'm just going to start off with, I feel like he just went the opposite way. But Rick, go ahead. I
feel like he didn't have to land on the decision. You know, he could have explored the options instead of assuming he knew authoritatively what it meant. Which he does kind of, you know, vacillate a little bit, but I don't know. I felt like he was arrogant, you know? He thought he knew. And so that, I don't know.
Yeah.
My thoughts were still coming.
It was interesting because the way this part was laid out was, like, Jason was like, wait a minute, there's Luke. He's right in front of me. He's almost seeing it as a movie, but then he realizes he's part of it. He's like, wait a minute, I'm in this movie. And I feel like let me just say, after I saw this, it was like clear to me what the dream was trying to say, possibly, that if he were to fail his duties as a Jedi, the Vong take it. He is the balance point, right?
He's the pivotal character who will either doom or save the galaxy from this specific conflict. And so then his...
goes the opposite way. I'm like, what are you doing?
He's like, okay, I want no part in it. Peace out. He tries to go off. He's like, anybody got a map to Octo? I need to go to Octo. I got Octo.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a Legends podcast. Yeah, he tries to peace out, yeet his way out of the galaxy. first class flight to Yeetville, and doesn't succeed. Of course, the Vong forces his hand. And so I like that we add in Savong Law, that then the fact that he takes his foot. Savong Law now is going to be hell-bent on revenge, and he's a great character in this series. The Darth Vader of the Yuuzhan Vong, as Pablo calls him. So I'm excited to see that develop moving
the
forward.
The foot. That's just such a random, like, appendage to lose. Is like, it just sounds like an old person got hip issues. That, oh, yeah, my foot's acting up again. Like, I lost my foot. Yeah, exactly. It just, yeah. Like...
Well, it's the next arms. Time they meet, it's a really iconic scene because Savong Law pulls out his amphistaff, it gets all hard, and he's like, time for a showdown. Bet you didn't recognize me because of my new foot.
Yeah.
There you go, another sequel trilogy joke there. All right, moving on. We talked about Jason a lot. Let's talk about some other Skywalkers, some other solos. Jaina is stranded on Duro with her family after suffering an injury in the beginning of the book in service to Rogue Squadron. Is this just Kathy Tires telling Mike Stackpole that she doesn't want to write Jaina as part of Rogue Squadron? or do you think there's more to it? Does Jaina's being grounded, I'm reaching on this question, guys, does her experience of being grounded parallel the experience of the refugees that she's encountering on Duro? Is it a matter of, like, limiting her freedom and showing that now she's boots on the ground?
She was exactly what she was doing. She was sky high, top of the world. Look at me. I've killed 15 coral skippers. I'm top dog. I've got a big ego. And then now you don't. Now what are you going to do about it? You know, like, prove it. The life, basically the Force is telling her to prove it. This isn't, you know, the world isn't all skies and blue skies and red roses. It's you're going to have some setbacks. And
you might lose a foot along the way.
You might lose your spleen. So, exactly. And I feel like that's kind of what we're seeing here a bit is, you know, she's top gun, top dog right now, and not so much anymore. And now that she's kind of I don't want to say she's useless, but now that she's not a pilot, it's like, we don't need her right now. Like, you guys take care of her. We're going to go figure this out.
Man, and yeah, I wish they would have dug more into the loss of sight and continued that a little longer. That would have been really fun to explore. Even if she was somehow able to become a pilot again while being blind, come on, that would be epic.
Yeah, because a Jedi could do it. It's almost like, Rick, you could say, give me the one.
All right. I got to get
that. Yeah, it's almost like, Rick, you could say, blink, and you'll miss it.
Oh!
How fast it happens there. With her blindness. I forgot it was in the book, and I read it, and I was like, holy smokes, she's blind? No, it's 30 pages. Nothing a little Bacta won't heal.
I think that's what makes it good, is there's so many things that are just whoop, just they introduce an idea, and then they just fade away from it, where it's nah, not really, just plan.
Yeah, the thing that I really think serves that particular plot point well, though, in this book, is that we get to explore back in Stackpole's duology, Jaina as part of Rogue Squadron. So you get that part of her story, and then now this pulls her back to her family.
Yes, and that was needed, so I do appreciate that part for sure.
But let's be honest, I just like reading her as part of Rogue Squadron. That's really satisfying.
It's really cool. That's really cool.
And I want to go back. Give me more Gavin Darklighter.
Yes.
I love him as the leader of Rogue Squadron.
Gavin turned out to be just great.
I'm so proud of that young man.
Yeah,
I know.
Seen him grow.
Yeah, Jaina, though, has some more development to come through the post-New Jedi Order and beyond. So keep a pin in that one. Another huge development in the Skywalker family is revealed in this book. Guys, this is going to have some absolutely cataclysmic galactic consequences. Luke and Mara Jade, arguably the two most powerful force wielders in the galaxy, have procreated. And there is no longer a deadly virus in Mara. Now there's an even worse. I mean, now there's a baby. Shout out to all the babies out there. They're expecting. First of all, how was the pregnancy announcement handled? Oh, no, I just got cured of my disease. There's something else wrong with me. Oh, wait a second. It's a baby. How did the big twist? Yeah, the parasite is actually a Skywalker baby.
All these nosy Jedi family members keep on, letting their senses go too far and accidentally discovering, that's kind of invasive, guys. Come on.
It was. Yeah. It's funny, right? Because I'm like, oh man, what else is wrong with Mara Jade? Is George gonna, axe it now? Is this the moment?
Oh yeah.
Not sure what was going on, and then of course to see it, it's a bit of a shock, right? Like, oh, where are we going now? This is different. We thought we had all of the Jedi in front of us, right? All of the, what would you call them? Like the head
the pieces on the chessboard.
Yeah, we thought we had all the Jedi pieces on the chessboard with Jason, Jaina, and Anakin. Not quite done yet.
Yeah. Yeah. The to use a Dune reference, it's like the Lisan al Gaib. And then all of a sudden, the mom's got another in the baby cooker. What do you call that? The oven?
The baby cooker.
Yeah, that's not right. I was looking for a different expression, and it did not come to me, and that's what I landed on.
Which that's way creepier in the book. So plug for the Dune book, y'all.
All right, nerd. Moving on. No, I do want to read them.
I'll read the first one, and then you're done.
Okay, thank you. I won't. But how do you think this would be? This is huge. Luke Skywalker's having a baby. Mara Jade, this is huge for the EU. There's one, you could even call it huge, H-E-U-G-E. The sequel trilogy has one. There is one solo Skywalker descendant. Now we're going to have four. How do you think this will change the galactic saga moving forward? Just like your early speculation here for the child of Luke Skywalker.
Well,
What are they going to be like? How's it going to change the galaxy?
Before we get there, Kathy Tires gets two major Star Wars moments in her life. One.
Okay.
A brand new Skywalker. Two. Trusa Bakura.
No, but like in Trusa Bakura, Leia tells the Force ghost of Vader to peace out.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's a great moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. He comes back. Anakin's like, hey, listen, I wasn't a great dad. And she's like, forget you. Get out of here.
I already have a dad. Get out of here. That's so good.
That's awesome.
All right. Yeah. Rick, you want to hit
How do you think it's going to change the galaxy?
I got a visual. Give me a second. I'm working on something here.
All right, Rick's doing some Photoshop behind the scenes. I will say this character then becomes, it does become one of my favorite EU characters of all time. Watching this character grow, progress, their relationships to other major EU characters, chef's kiss, spectacular. So can't wait to see how you guys get to experience this new character for the first time. Michael says, bigger than the twins? Are you talking about the size of the baby or like the consequences upon the galaxy? No, probably not as big of consequences, but still huge, and I'm excited that they are like a Super Smash Brothers character joining the fight.
Unknowingly joining the fight.
Yeah, all they're doing in there is like trying to soak up those nutrients and all that good stuff. So while Rick finishes up his memes behind the scenes.
he's really, so right now, Rick just opened Paint Shop.
I'm panicking. I'm trying to
Microsoft Paint.
Microsoft Paint. There you go.
Rush art, okay?
He opened up Microsoft Paint. He's grabbing the rectangle tool. Looks like now he's using the paint bucket tool to fill in the color. We'll get there. But this is a major moment. Like I said, we thought all the pieces were laid out on the table. We thought we knew what was in front of us. And not just, you know, obviously we've got some character progression to get to until, you know, this being is of force use, I guess, of consequence of sorts.
Yeah, it takes a while. It's the next series, really.
Yeah.
It's not so much a new Jedi Order thing.
But it sets up like, oh, we're going to get more. We're definitely going to get more, right? And just thinking about reading this in 2000, that's the only thing you're thinking about is, wait a minute, if this is happening now, what are we going to get next?
Right. Yeah, and Legacy of the Force is when this character really shines and comes into their own, and it does it in just spectacular fashion, yeah, in my opinion.
This is a mess, but this is the best I've got. I really think that having more Skywalker Solo kids, it's setting us up for Star Wars, the next generation.
Oh, great. For our audio listeners, we are looking at a very poorly photoshopped meme.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. Just for you.
The Star Trek Next Generation poster. But the Trek is crossed out is Wars.
Cheers. You're telling me, so disappointed right now.
You're telling me you couldn't like change faces or anything. All you got was changing the word Trek to Wars, and that took you that long?
Yeah, it's complicated.
Oh, man. So we've talked about the heroes. We've talked about the Skywalkers, the Solos. Let's talk about the villains here for a bit. Nominor, I compared him to Count Olaf earlier with the Lemony Snicket series of unfortunate events. Okay. For those who don't get that reference, Count Olaf is in disguise as a different character several books of the series. And he's like, oh, no, now I am actually the wedding. Not wedding. I'm thinking about weddings. Dang it. I'm like the hotel manager, and they're like, no, you're not, you're Count Olaf. And he's like, no, I'm not, and that's definitely not the same tattoo on my ankle that you've always seen. And so Nominor does that in this book. He's in disguise. What's your impression, guys, of Nominor at this point in the series? He's one of the more dynamic characters in the series. He goes on an arc. Where are we at with him now?
So I'm having a hard time keeping track of my Yuuzhan Vong characters, honestly. But, you know, he's one that I'm following. Desperate, I feel, that he keeps having these setbacks. And so he's kind of at the end of his leash, where if anything else goes wrong, it's clear that he's not the top dog. And so, you know, what does someone who's more and more desperate do? They tend to, you know, intensify the stakes, and either really good things or really bad things happen, depending on your perspective.
I feel you on the Vong confusion, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so he is in the mix somewhere. He was like an advanced spy. He's been sent to sow discord in the galaxy in advance of the Yuuzhan Vong arriving.
Right.
And now the Yuuzhan Vong have arrived. He's still out trying to sabotage things, though he royally messes it up here. Though he's got, I love that he's got like a bag of critters, and he unleashes his moths to destroy the space station. Though it is kind of a cool biological warfare technique to eat through the... It's a cool kind of like science fiction thing. There's a biodome to protect the...
Good movie.
I mean, so think about... Is that a movie?
I think it's Pauly Shore.
Way back.
So you think about... in Star Wars, a character lands on a planet and they pretty much just can just go breathe the air.
Yeah.
But in space, that's not how it works. So not every atmosphere is breathable. Not every atmosphere is... And not every atmosphere has got the perfect mix of what? Hydrogen and oxygen that we need to survive?
Nitrogen, yeah.
Yeah, I know space science, obviously.
Of course.
And so this actually confronts that kind of sci-fi. Freddie, this is what you say about Teresa Bakura. It leans more sci-fi than fantasy.
Kathy
and so...
She's good at it.
She does get this sci-fi element, which is not all atmospheres are equally breathable for all species.
And I don't know how many books before or after this, but the Siruker actually mentioned this book, the Siruvi. She wonders how, or I think it's, is it Luke? Somebody wonders, how would they deal with the Vong?
Very interesting.
Oh, okay.
They get a name drop.
Yeah.
Freddie, what if I told you one of the books in the New Jedi Order is a spiritual successor to the Teresa Bakura?
So ready.
Why is everybody always trying to go back to Bakura? It does happen in the New Jedi Order, though I will say, for my money, it's one of the more lackluster titles in the series. But we'll see. You might love it. I think you will. I think you'll love it. You'll be old and gray by then, by the time we get to it.
By book. What book is it? What number?
It's like 15 or 16.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'll have my third child by then. And
yeah, because the first two will be twins, just like Han and Leia, right? Fantastic. So, Namor, keep your eye on him. A very dynamic character in this series, though he comes across as very Count Olaf.
That's a really good this comparison. One. So, props to you for that.
Thanks, Rick. I've been sitting on that comparison for 10 years. 10 years, and I finally got a chance to make it.
I'm not gonna lie. When I saw the notes, I didn't read Count, and so I thought you were talking about the frozen character Olaf. I don't get it. I don't get it. But.
In Star Wars!
Yeah.
Oh, that was weird. I just morphed into Josh Gad for a second.
Let's put that in our Legends Look Back musical that is coming soon to a Patreon near you.
Don't you dare make me Josh Gad in the Legends Look Back musical. Don't you dare. Friggin' hate that guy. Moving on. All right. So, shout out here to one more character before we move on to a couple overarching questions, and that's Randy the Hutt. I mean, Randa the Hutt? Rhonda the Hutt? R-A-N-D-A, but I was reading this book right at the same time as I was going to Freddie's wedding, and one of his groomsmen, who was shuttling me around all weekend, and my chauffeur, was Randy. Shout out to Randy. Randy's a real one. And so I just kept reading on accident, Randy the Hutt, and picturing Freddie's friend Randy, but as a hut with a big tail. But I couldn't tell this to Randy, because that's a really weird thing to tell somebody.
Especially when you just don't know him yet.
You enjoyed it.
All right, guys. So we got time for... Go ahead.
I mean, what kind of Hutt voice do you think Randa has?
Well, not like the one from Clone Wars.
This one was Zero the Hutt.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, it was so bad. I hate
definitely
it.
Not Stinky.
Oh, man.
Definitely not Stinky. Jabba.
Ooh, suck.
But he's super nice. You know, like a really nice Hutt. He's a nice Hutt.
Can he be British? Let's make him British.
Is that... That's an outcast, right? Hutts aren't... Clearly, usually that nice.
This is a nice Hutt. Yeah, Randall the Hutt from Michael calls him Randall the Hutt. that's great. I'm picturing him now like the villain from Monsters, Inc.
Randall.
Yeah. So, but he's nice. He's like working with the refugee camp, and then he sacrifices himself. So a good Hutt. Not hashtag not all Hutts. You know what I'm saying?
But he's. Yeah.
Okay.
He's a morally gray character who does something heroic in the end.
He does something heroic in the end.
All right, we've got time. Exactly. We've got time for one last question. We talked about the refugees last roundtable. Let's move on from that one here. There's a lot of refugee stuff in this, which is totally worth you know, some real world comparisons. But to go back to the last roundtable for some more discussion on that, let's get to the ultimatum here at the very end of the book. This is where we'll end the show. In the same way, in the end of the book, the galaxy is faced with an ultimatum from Savonglong. Savonglong, all these made up Star Wars names, guys, like Randall. The ultimatum: turn over Jason and the Jedi, or Coruscant will be destroyed. Do you think there's a real chance that the tide of public opinion will turn against the Jedi? The next book, are we going to have bounty hunters pulling in Jedi? Or what do you think is the right move for the Jedi, or for the galaxy? Should they turn over the Jedi? If you're a random Joe out in the galaxy, you see a Jedi in a coffee shop, you call on the popo?
It's the easiest thing in propaganda, by the way, to focus attention away from, hey, look, we're actually really bad beings and we will enslave you. But that's not what is at the forethought. The forethought is you get to survive at the sake of just these silly little people.
I mean, that's the Nazi party.
Exactly. Mm. And it's easy to just be like, oh, I want to survive. Get rid of them. Right. Instead of taking the light side approach, which is the hardest approach to take, which is, no, we're going to have this hope. We're going to have this fire. We're going to beat the heck out of you. That's the hardest way. That's why it's the light side. The easy, the dark side is just like, yep, get rid of them. Let's go. Mm, right. It's anyway.
Oof. Harrowing real world comparison there, Freddie.
Yeah.
Rick, what do you do?
I was thinking about like X-Men and mutants and.
Yeah.
You know, like. The fear of the unknown, and so the people turn against them because they've got these strange powers that nobody else has, so we can't trust them. Sorry, there's a mosquito. I hope I just got it.
But, I thought you were just clapping for him.
So
emphatic.
Excited.
Emphasis.
Let's go. Star Wars.
X-Men and Star Wars. X-M-A-N. Yeah, keep going.
Okay, that's all. We're going to do that. We'll save it. We'll save it for the mixtape. Anyway, yeah, so... that was the most interesting part of the book for me, was setting up that challenge and wondering, okay, how seriously are people going to take this? At first, I was like, come on, they're going to see right through that. Like, obviously, they're not going to honor a promise. We've already seen that they don't honor their promises. But then, you guys, just hearing you guys talk about that, like, the Empire did the same thing and were very effective. And so, it's not too far of a stretch to see the galaxy... turn against Jedi again.
Yeah. Yeah, so we do see that in the prequel trilogy. Another prequel comparison, though this precedes the prequels. Mm-hmm. And so I do love how many little parallels there are paralleling the prequels.
It's a great point.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep your eyes peeled for that. As we lead into the next book that we're going to do here on Legends Look Back, we're going to do a two-parter. Once again, we're going to do The Edge of Victory duology by Greg Keyes. So very, very much looking forward to doing those next month in the month of May. But that is going to do it for this week, guys. Oh, yeah, there's the most spectacular image that Rick is showing here on the live stream. The artwork from the Essential Reader's Companion of that final showdown. I love this image.
It's amazing. Mm. It's pretty great.
Man. Yeah. So that's going to be the next book that we do on the show. But keep your eyes peeled. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to do something fun for May the 4th. We won't have a live episode that day, but we do have something cool in the works on social media. It's not 100% finalized and approved yet, so we might put out a little announcement in the podcast feed or something when we've got that figured out. It's just been busy with the wedding and all that. And congratulations once again to Mr. and Mrs. C out there. So looking forward to May the 4th. If you don't hear from us before then, happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with y'all. That's the Southern version, by the way, guys, with y'all.
It's true.
And
also the Catholic.
And also with you. Thank you, good sir. In the meantime, keep your eyes peeled for some other great shows in the Youtini Podcast Network, Star Wars Archives, The Cosmic Force, Youtini Avatar Show, and the Youtini Baseball Show. Oh, and another one, the Youtini Show. So many great podcasts you can be checking out in the meantime. But that'll do it for this week on Legends Look Back. If you're looking for other podcasts to expand your fandom, check out the rest of our lineup in the Youtini Network. If you're already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you. A special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Baczynski on the High Council, as well as James T. Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo at our captain tier for your amazing support. If you'd like a shout out here at the end of the show, you can join the captain or High Council tier as well. Rick.
Yeah, so you guys can catch us live every other Tuesday night at 8:30 Central right here at utini.com/@UtiniVault. Be sure to ring that bell if you want to get notified whenever we go live. And remember to subscribe to the channel, leave us a review, and your favorite podcast platform. If you'd like your thoughts read on the show, you can email us at legendslookback@utini.com. And we're also at that Twitter or X thing called Twitter or X. And our handle there is @legendslookback. Freddie!
Yeah, let's keep the party going and hop on over to Discord, where we are continuing the conversation with other Utinians about this week's episode. You can find us in the #legends-books channel. All right, that's about it. Jared, you want to take it out?
That's right, everybody. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and let's keep on expanding the universe together. May the Force be with you.
This is a Utini broadcast.